We are live. Okay, so the story goes that Rabbi Gutnick was creating this beautiful, beautiful event about Taharas HaMishpacha, and he was expecting like 200, 300 people to show up, like really had high expectations for this, busied himself, all the details, and instead of no people showing up, one person showed up. And he was, I don't think crestfallen is like enough, he was really, really upset, really, really downcast. And he wrote into the Rebbe expressing this. And the Rebbe's response was short, curt, to the point. And his response was, Moshe Rabbeinu only had one mother. And I love that response. I love that the messaging there. It's so comforting. It's so inspiring to just know that the impact that you have on one person is just, it's a whole world. It can impact, I mean, it impacts an entire generation and like an entire nation. So one person is one person. Okay, so what are we talking about today? Let's talk a little bit about what we were talking about last week. Last time we spoke, we were talking about mitzvahs and what a mitzvah truly is. And we discussed the whole idea of mitzvah being a merkava. So what is a merkava? A merkava is a chariot. And a chariot is something that doesn't really have a will of its own. It just kind of goes where the horses are taking it or where the driver is directing it, right? So what is the mitzvah? In the same way that, let's say, your body doesn't actually do anything unless the mind instructs it to do something, right? It doesn't react or move or change or do anything unless the mind is actually instructing it to do so. So in the same way, mitzvahs, right? It's almost like it takes our body and makes it into a chariot for God's will. We take on his will and we become a vehicle for what he wanted. So instead of us basically deciding to do whatever we want to do, I want to do this with my day. Instead, I decided to become a vehicle for God's will and I instead chose to do a mitzvah. I took on the torch of God's light. That's what a mitzvah is. Today, we're going to talk a little bit more to Torah. What is Torah? If mitzvah is a merkava, you being a vehicle for Hashem's light, his will, what is Torah? So in order to talk a little bit about it, we're going to illustrate it with a few different stories. But in short, what is Torah? Torah is Ein Sof. Torah is the light of God. It's literally getting attuned to him. The way he, like the most him that we could even ever feel connected to without being completely subsumed by him. Even the Or Ein Sof is an overwhelming concept. So what does that look like? So it's just two beautiful stories that I think illustrate this in an interesting way. Rav Michal Zlotcheber is actually a famous niggun that he has, one of my favorite niggunim. When he was a child, he was actually a child genius, an absolute brilliant mind, child prodigy. And when he was a very young boy, he knew reams and reams of Gemara by heart. He studied only with his father, whose name was Reb Yitzchak Brevitcher, and that was his teacher. And he would just sit as a 7-8-year-old and just like knew all the Gemara, just basically went through chapters and chapters. And a person in their town, a very holy man, Rav Chaim Sanzer, wanted Rav Michal Zlotcheber to join his like shtibel, like his little yeshiva. They're all grown men, but he heard that this boy was such a prodigy. He thought, let's engage, let's talk, let's argue, let's have Rav Michal come over here. This young, 8-9-year-old Rav Michal. And so his father says, okay, fine, sure. So he sends him off to this shul. And Rav Michal stays for about a week, and then he comes home. And his father says, what, you didn't enjoy Rav Chaim Sanzer? Like, what, he's not as good. He's not as great as the Talmud Chacham as I am. Like, why did you come home? And Rav Michal, as a very young child, said, no, he's such a Talmud Chacham. He's an incredible tzaddik. He knows Kol HaTorah Kula. He's an amazing individual. But when his lips speak words of Torah, I don't see fire. Which is really funny because like Gen Z language, like anything that's really exciting or inspiring, people say fire. I just thought it was a very funny it's a very funny time for that story to come alive. But the Rav Michal, to be able to look at his father, who was his chosen teacher, and say, you and him are the same. You're both tzaddikim. You both know Torah. But when you say Torah, I see fire, is just showing the fact that when he experienced Torah, obviously we're talking about a very sensitive, a very spiritually attuned soul. That's who Rav Michal was. But when his father taught him Torah, he saw fire. He saw Arayin Seif. He saw what this connection was. It was different than learning it from somebody else. And a similar story about Rav Nachum of Chernobler. When he was young, he went to visit Rav Hillel of Paratre. He was 2 years old, and Rav Hillel actually passed away like a few months after. But he got to see Rav Hillel when he was 2 years old, and he's on his father's shoulders to see Rav Hillel over the crowd. And the first glimpse he got of Rav Hillel, he started screaming in Ukrainian, fire, fire, because that's what he saw. He witnessed, even as a two-year-old, he witnessed Rav Hillel, and that's what he saw. He saw the spiritual fire of Arayin Seif manifesting itself physically on Rav Hillel Paratre. Again, talking about a very spiritually sensitive soul, someone who could see Arayin Seif, could see that expressed in a person who represents Torah, who is fully and entirely a Talmud Chacham, a true Torah scholar. So what's interesting to note is we have Torah, we have mitzvahs. And let's just basically discuss the two of them and see the advantages of both and see where mitzvahs are lacking and Torah comes to the rescue, and where you could see that there's maybe a slight disadvantage to Torah and an advantage to mitzvahs. So just an interesting thing to think about. When we look at Avram Avinu, we know that the Aves kept all the mitzvahs. How could the Aves have kept the mitzvahs if they didn't even know what the mitzvahs were? They didn't even have Torah. Right? They didn't have what we know as an actual book. The Torah wasn't given yet. But what he had was Arayin Seif. He had the light. He had the exposure to the godliness. And from there, he was able to deduce mitzvahs. Meaning he never actually got mitzvahs. He never actually received the Torah. But because he had the light, and from there he was able to draw down the mitzvahs. An interesting thing to also think about is, for example, when we were given the Torah, it wasn't until thousands of years later, I don't know exactly how many years later, when we actually had written down the Mishnah. So we actually took parts of the Torah and codified it and made it something that was written down, and then we went from the Mishnah, we went to the Gemara, and from the Gemara, we went to all the Rishonim and the Acharonim, and basically defining more and more and more nuances, more and more and more discussion of what exactly Torah is. Now, what is all that? First of all, how did people keep halacha in the olden days before there was Mishnah, before there was an understanding of what halacha actually was? They say that the people of that time period, if they had a question in halacha, they would open up Tanakh, right? They would open up the Chumash, they would read the Pasuk, and from there they would know what the halacha is. What does that even mean? How are you able to open up the Torah and then understand from there what the halacha is? We have literally thousands of Svarim helping us trying to understand what the Svarim are, what the halacha actually is. So the understanding is that we're talking about a more spiritually attuned generation. And if that's a more spiritually attuned generation, then what's happening is they're more able to tap into the concept of the Arayin Seif, the spirituality, Hashem in the Torah, and just experience the light. They're not getting caught up in what we now know as the intellectual pursuit of Torah. Kabbalah talks about the Torah having a panim and an acharayim, meaning there's the face of Torah and then the hind part of Torah. What does that mean, that there's a face of Torah and there's this like hind aspect of Torah, the back of Torah? And Kabbalah explains that there's Torah in and of itself, what it is. It is Arayin Seif. It is literally the Chachma of Hashem manifest in this world. And then there's this hind part of Torah, which is basically the intellect of Torah, the wisdom of Torah, the discussion in Torah, the questions we have in Torah. All of that, basically the medium of using our intellect to grasp Torah, is the Achrayim of Torah. And what happens is, in our less attuned spiritually, our less spiritually attuned generation, we have unfortunately gotten more used to relating to Torah from the Achrayim, from the hind part of Torah, because that's just where we're at. That's what we see. We connect intellectually with certain aspects of Torah, and the ways we forget to relate to that frontal part of Torah, the punim of Torah, the face of Torah, which is, this is our Ein Sof. So if we're not in a space of just being enlightened, right, or spiritually attuned, then what we have to just rely on is that intellectual pursuit, that wisdom through our literally our bodies, through our own channel that makes sense for us. What's interesting to note is if you gave the Torah, for example, to the Malachim, right? And there's lots of discussion about this in the Gemara. The Malachim even wanted it, right? They told Hashem, like, give us the Torah. Like, we could do this. We got this. But it never could have worked. Why? Because if you gave the Torah to the Malachim to study, they would have just disappeared, because there would have just been this overwhelming exposure of Ein Sof, and they would have just been subsumed in the light of Hashem, and they wouldn't have been able to study even a word of it, because they would just get lost in it, because their attunement to seeing Hashem, seeing the Panim of Torah, seeing what Torah actually is. So in ways, our deficiency, which is our very humanness and our ability to philosophize and argue and comment and make up whatever we think that the Torah is trying to say, our ability to postulate on the Torah, is actually in ways our advantage, because that's the only way we're able to actually study the Torah. Hashem gave us this diminishment, or Hashem gave us this this separation, this distinction from Him, so that we're able to do what His will is, which is study Torah and achieve the mitzvahs, fulfill the mitzvahs. If we were malachim, we would never be able to do either, right? So what's interesting to think about is how we could get very caught up in relating to Hashem in a way of our nefesh bahamas, our animal soul, and think, okay, this relationship is all about fearing Him just because I'm afraid. I don't want Him to do anything. I see Him. I see what He wants from me. I'll just follow status quo so nothing bad happens. Or I could love Hashem because, hey, it feels good and it's so nice to be spiritual and it makes me feel powerful if I know that there's a God in the world and that I can relate to Him. Then there's a way of interacting with the Yevishter from your nefeshly kiss, which is deeply acknowledging His presence. It's not coming from me. It's not my wisdom. It's not about me and my benefits and what's going to happen to me if I study His Torah and do His mitzvahs. It's about Him. It's about standing in awe in front of Him, having an experience literally of awe. What is awe? Awe is not fear. Awe is not feeling diminishment. It's not excitement either, which is another level. Being excited about the Yevishter could also be could be a Nefesh Bahamas experience or a Nefesh Elokis experience. When one stands in awe, that means I'm just standing here and witnessing Yevishter. And what I'm experiencing is a deep, tremendous level of humbling, a real humility. I'm standing in His presence. He allows me to have the opportunity. He's gifting me the opportunity to study His will, to be attuned to his Torah. That in the moments when I'm studying Torah, I'm fully becoming a part of Arein Seif. I'm not just bearing the torch. I'm not just becoming a Merkava where I am taking, I'm putting on the clothes of someone, like your clothes move where you want them to move, your body moves where your mind wants you to move. So when you do a mitzvah, you are becoming a Merkava for the Eibishter in that moment, and that's beautiful. When it comes to studying Torah, you are becoming Arein Seif. You are tapping into an energy, a spiritual energy to the source in a way that it means you're not part of this physical world any longer. You're a part of something so much greater, so much larger. You're skipping all the levels in between. You're taking your lowly self and you're getting sucked right into the source, the wellsprings of Hashem's creation. When we attune ourselves to that, and we have the humility and humbleness to actually see that, then what we're doing is we're attuning ourselves to the panim of Torah instead of the acharayim of Torah. Again, not something that we can necessarily do all the time, but the more that we're able to stand in awe, the more that we are able to step in a little bit into that space of acknowledging what Hashem gave to us, like a malach does, but not in a way that we are subsumed and we lose ourselves in it, because it's hard for us to do that. We physically cannot. But for us, at least intellectually, we could shut down the intellect and at least in that way experience the Arein Seif and see the panim of Torah. So the question comes up, well, why did Hashem give us mitzvahs then? Meaning, if we had this ability to tap into something so incredible, just literally become a part of Arein Seif, get subsumed, not fully, but even intellectually, into something as great as the source of creation, Hashem, the source of life, then why do I need to perform mitzvahs? Like, why was that an essential part of our life, of the way that Hashem created us? Another way of saying it would be, why should I light candles if I can be the sun? If I can step into the source of light, then why am I just lighting candle by candle by candle? That makes no sense. Why would I ever light 10 candles when I could just be overwhelmingly attuned to the source of light instead of trying to light candles? And the answer to that is that for some people, Torasei Umnasei, that was their entire life. And for those kinds of people, that their Torah was every aspect of their world, someone like, let's say, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, yeah, he was exempt from doing mitzvahs because he was busy with Torah. He was fully in Torah, and he was living this life of Arein Seif. So for someone who's on the level of Shimon Bar Yochai, incredible. And the answer is, and it's hard to a little bit stomach, but the answer is that for those of us who are not able to attain that level, then we're just going to be wasting our time. We might as well be doing mitzvahs, right? We don't want, if we're not going to be able to tap into that absolute source. And remember, it's actually a great analogy to think of light, because light needs some sort of container, right? And you look at the source. The sun is, it's like a ball of energy. It is the source. Look at a candle. Candle needs something to ground it. It needs something to hold it. You can't just take the light to remove it from the candle. It's there because it's being held. The container is the candle. So unless you're able to be that spiritually attuned, absolutely spiritually sensitive person who is seeing Arein Seif, is in a constant state of awe, witnessing Eibishter, and therefore experiencing Ein Seif by engaging in Torah, then kol kavod, definitely go for that and do that. But for someone who is less spiritually attuned and cannot necessarily get to that space, then we kind of need to work on our own terms, which is do mitzvah by mitzvah, which is literally taking on the will of the Avestra and becoming a Merkava in just this one brief experience. And in an experience that lives forever, like we spoke about last week, but it's still just a one will of God, one directive of God. In one way, I am now experiencing taking on his will, which is very deep and a tremendous experience as well. And then I have to light candle by candle by candle and basically bring my spiritual sensitivity up and heighten it on my own and work towards creating a larger flame until, God willing, it's a bonfire. But unless I'm that person who could live the sun's light, to live that source of light, then I also have to engage in mitzvahs. So how do we make this very, very practical? How do we make this something that we could live with on an everyday basis? Shavuos is coming upon us. Shavuos is the Yom Tov of Torah. It's the Yom Tov of celebrating that we are receiving the Torah. And I think that's something that we don't often think about or celebrate is the word receiving. Kabbalah Satara. We wish each other Kabbalah Satara b'simcha b'pnimius, that we should receive the Torah in a very joyous and internal way. What does that mean? What does it mean to experience that in a very joyous and internal way? So I think it's hashgacha pratis that we're learning this parak now, right before Shavuos, because I think hopefully it will help us experience Shavuos in a deeper way. When we could witness that Hashem said he wants us, these physical beings that he has absolutely no connection to, has nothing that he needs from us, these physical bodies that are so remote from his light, his infinitude. And he says, I want this person in my world. I want this person to be inextricably intertwined with me by performing my will and by learning my wisdom. What we could do is feel a sense of humility, humbleness, and let that kind of sit. Let that land inside of you. The week that we're in right now is the week of Malchus, leading up to Shavuos. Malchus is all about receiving. And it makes sense that we've gone through this whole spiritual journey of working through the days of Sphira to come to this week of Malchus, receiving all the different midas. What is actually Malchus? What is that deep receiving? It's the humility, yes, but it's the humility that fills us with dignity. That's what Malchus is, right? The kingship, the sovereignty. It's not just hide the humility. It's the hide humility connected to Yisayid, connection, connecting to what? Connecting to God, connecting to my source, seeing that I am here because he has placed me here, wants me here, gives me his Torah and mitzvahs, right? All that bonding. And now I can experience a sense of awe, a deep sense of humility, and the dignity that it fills me with to be a person who can experience insight, a person who can be a Merkava to the Avishter. But it's very much based on, can I be a receiver? Can I be able to receive that idea, that immensity of responsibility, the immensity of his love, of his caring for me, the nothingness of me, and allowing that to land and not feeling like nothing and destroyed, but instead to feel infused with, he trusts me, he wants me, he chooses me. And that means that I have to rise to the occasion. I have to see his world the way he wants me to see his world. And when I can experience that, then that's when I'm ready and I'm a keli, I'm a vessel to receive the Torah. But there are a lot of things that can stop you from experiencing that. This physical world, ego, stuckness, I mean, everything is trying to stop you from experiencing a feeling of receptivity. And the first step towards experiencing that is thinking about your humility. Who am I? Where am I in this world? Is this my ego talking, or is this my godly soul talking? And it's almost like the Alter Rebbe's messaging is, it's comes again and again, just in different packaging. Ask yourself, who am I? Where do I come from? How can I tune myself a little bit more to my godly part of myself instead of feeling the stuckness of my ego? And if I could let my ego aside, then I could experience the world, the awe, the humility, the connection with the Eibishter, the Ein Sof, without any diminishment, without any blockages. I was just, I'm on this WhatsApp chat with a bunch of different coaches, and one of them posted some sort of meme that a woman put out there saying something that they didn't like. And everyone was like up in arms, like really upset about it. How could you say something like that to the Jewish world, who's basically like encouraging women to get divorced? And what was interesting to me was, in this specific area, okay, I get riled up in lots of different other ways, but here once, Baruch Hashem, I didn't. And I think it was easy for me to see why I wasn't getting riled up. Because if I'm constantly in a state of, I know the truth, or I am right, and I need everybody else to be right, or what that person is saying has to be corrected, or I need to make sure that everybody knows what is, then I'm getting stuck instead of hearing what the person is saying, or giving them space to just say what they want to say, or just allow another person to be. We live in an age where everybody is always fighting, and it's because we're so stuck in our egos, as opposed to, if I could have the ability to make space, again, that's the humility and the humbleness, then I'm able to then tap into receiving and communicating to other people, witnessing other people, seeing their experience. And more than anything, the point of this parak is to see the Eibishter and to see my connection to him and how he chooses us and what that should mean to me. But more than anything, it shouldn't be a I'm better than you or a gaivadik or an egotistical experience. It's an absolutely humbling, awe-filled experience. And I think to each person, it looks different. To like how to get to that space of awe, how to get to that space of receptivity. So I'll leave that with you to journal about, to think about what will help me get to that space of really receiving the Torah b'simcha, with joy, and b'pnimius, in an inward, really seeing Hashem's face experience. And I feel like if we give ourselves a minute, we could really come up with a few reasons why we're not seeing it or we're not receiving it. What's stopping us? What's happening in our lives that are not serving me? And what could shift a little bit so that I could be more of a keli for Hashem's infinite love and his commitment to us as a nation. He chooses us every Shavuos to be his wife again and again. And if we could receive that and let it sink in, even just for a moment, then we might experience true joy and we might experience that revelation of our insight. So everyone should have a beautiful experience on Shavuos. Should be Kabbalas HaTorah B'Simcha B'Pnimius. And I would love to hear if anyone wants to share. There's a funny story about, it's a true story, I just don't know all the details. This woman who was actually a widow, very simple woman, and on Yom Kippur, she came into shul, and she had two pieces of paper. And she read the first piece of paper where she feels like Hashem needs her forgiveness. Like, why, you know, she doesn't have a husband, this and that, and this and that, all the things why, you know, why, how he has wronged her. And then she has this other list where he probably feels that she has wronged him. And, you know, she hasn't done this, and she hasn't done that, she hasn't done this. And she ends off reading both lists, and she says, you know what, let's just call it a truce. And she walks out of the show. And it's such a beautiful story of seeing Hashem in such an authentic, genuine way. It's like, I know that you're there. I see you. I know where I stand. I know where you stand. We both can do better here. And I'm going to work on this a little bit further in the coming year. What's so beautiful and what's so genuine and authentic about it is what makes it so great. It's what makes it so beautiful. When we get all caught up in our minds and our justifications and our reasonings, that's when we lose sight of our insight, when we lose sight of what's happening here, our relationship with Abishur. So, yeah, thank you. Beautiful. Yeah, thank you for sharing. I'm gonna turn this off. Oh, we have some people commenting over here. So beautiful. This person said, what helped me was knowing everyone is carrying a little spark of Hashem. It's beautiful. And very beautiful. Thank you for sharing.